A quarter century ago, fantasy sports were born. Well, it was just baseball back then, and it wasn't called fantasy. It was called rotisserie. But in the years since, the concept has expanded to football, basketball, golf, etc. Today, it's a multi-million dollar industry said to be second only to porn as an internet cash cow. And like porn, it allows you to imagine yourself in a position real life will never offer you, that of owner and general manager of your own pro team. Each year, at the start of every season, fantasy owners convene in person or online to draft players from professional rosters to assemble their own virtual squads. During the season, owners get credit for their draftees' achievements, touchdowns, homers, strikeouts, goals, whatever. If you drafted Ryan Howard to be your first baseman, you're in clover. If you drafted Derek Lee, who in real life has been injured most of the season, you're screwed. For the thrill of virtual victory and the agony of virtual defeat, we can thank one man, Daniel Okrent. Yes, he's been on this program in his former role as public editor of the New York Times, but today he joins us as Rotisserie Baseball's founding father, reminiscing on how it all began.
I was bereft of baseball in the offseason between 1979 and 1980, and was on a plane from Hartford, Connecticut to Austin, Texas, and bored, and came up with an idea. And then I forced myself out into the world and proposed it to a few friends, and they liked the idea, except for those who didn't like the idea. And off we went. It was called Rotisserie because we had our first meetings in a now-defunct restaurant in New York called La Rotisserie Française.
Now, we're talking 1979, 1980. There were box scores in the paper every day enabling rotisserie participants to find out how his roster had performed. But there was sure no internet. I gather that the development of the internet changed everything.
It did, although I want to take credit for one other change in media. If you talk to people who worked at USA Today, which was starting around that time, they will tell you that because they ran expanded box scores with much more detail than those which ran in most newspapers, that really got the newspaper off the ground. It's the thing that made people, more than anything else, actually buy USA Today. One of the consequences of that, in time, is that most daily papers began to run extended box scores as well. And if you compare a typical box score in a newspaper today to 25 years ago, you see the effect of rotisserie.
With all due credit to USA Today and the change in box score detail that it engendered, let's talk about the internet and its effect on what is now known as fantasy sports.
Right.
How dramatic was that effect?
Enormous. I think that the game was pretty popular through the 80s and into the early 90s. But when the internet arrived and enabled people to get their statistics instantaneously, enabled them to join leagues with people around the country, enabled them to turn over their entire lives to this endeavor, it really moved into the millions who play it. Another media institution where the principals have told me that it had enormous effect was ESPN.com. At least early on in ESPN.com's history, maybe the first 3-4 years, 80% of its traffic came from people playing fantasy sports. And I believe that's the same at Sportsline and at SI.com.
When you came up with Rotisserie Baseball, it happened that you were in the media and writing for magazines and so forth. Did your ties to the media in any way contribute to the craze catching on?
Unquestionably. My original league, I think of the 10 of us, 8 of us were in the media. Because we were in the media, we knew other people in the media. That led to feature stories about us in newspapers and appearances on the Today Show and CBS Morning News. And that really was the first step in popularizing, making people aware of it. And secondarily, in 1981, during the baseball strike, this was the second season of rotisserie, by then, there was a rotisserie game in nearly every press box in the major leagues. The people from various newspapers, radio stations, TV stations would play amongst themselves. And then when the strike came in the summer of 1981, they had nothing to write about. There was no baseball going on. Football hadn't started. So nearly every sports columnist filled one of his or her 3 times a week slots with a story about their rotisserie league. And from there, it zoomed.
All right, Dan. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, I hope it works out.
Once upon a time, sports fans were devoted to teams, but fantasy sports fans live or die by the fortunes of players who may or may not be on their favorite teams. Let's say you're a Cleveland Indians loyalist checking the box score to see how they did Tuesday against Detroit. Hey, 7 runs in the first and a 12-7 victory. Great! But wait, they did that against starting pitcher Kenny Rogers of Detroit, who got shelled, and he's the ace of your fantasy pitching staff. Are you happy or are you sad? For the answer, we turn not to a sports writer, but to a fantasy sports writer. Matthew Berry, also known as the talented Mr. Roto, doesn't hang out in press boxes, but he has his own website and a column in Sporting News and a radio show in Los Angeles and a TV presence on such shows as ESPN's Cold Pizza. Matthew says that from where he sits, among several TVs watching several games, fantasy has not changed the reality of how sports are covered.
It's basically statistic and player-based. So that's always been the case. Since the advent of cable television and, frankly, SportsCenter, it's about the dunks and the home runs or the touchdown celebrations. It's not about the great offensive line play. And, well, you know, frankly, welcome to the world. You know, if Peyton Manning throws 3 touchdowns on Sunday, that's going to get covered regardless of whether it has an impact fantasy-wise or not. That's the lead story of the Colts game.
Is it doing anything to the nature of fandom so that the attention is now off of teams and only on individual players who, you know, happen to be performing in team sports?
If anything, it's just increased awareness and appreciation for the sport. I'm a huge Washington Redskins fan, so I'm always going to watch the Redskins. But if I didn't play fantasy football, that's all I would do, is I would just watch the Redskins game. But because I play fantasy football, I have a rooting interest in every single NFL game. How did my player do? How did the guy I'm playing, his players do?
You raise an interesting question, and that is of conflict of interest. When the Skins are playing a team with one or two or several of your fantasy league players on it, do you stop rooting for the Skins and start rooting for your fantasy team players to perform well against the Redskins?
No. It's the Redskins above all else. But, you know, the Redskins can win a game 7-0, or they can win it 35-34. It's still a victory for the Redskins. So if my fantasy players happen to do well against the Redskins, I don't have a problem with that. I have heard the argument that it says that, well, people start rooting for their players instead of teams. But you know what? In a case like that, it just basically means your fandom and relationship with a team isn't that strong, and the team hasn't done enough to warrant your fandom. And it's easy to point the finger at fantasy leaguers, but, you know, trust me, people that are playing fantasy sports, they are huge sports fans. They want something to root for.
Okay, point taken. However, I must share a little from my personal experience. I was in a fantasy baseball league, and I am a lifelong Philadelphia Phillies fan. But I didn't have a great number of Phillies on my fantasy team roster. And I would go to the Phillies box score, and I would see that Jim Thome had hit 2 home runs and knocked in 6. And instead of going, oh, yeah, Jim Thome, Philadelphia Phillies, I was going, oh, my God, I just got behind 6 runs in the RBI race and, you know, 2 homers in the home run race because he was competing against my slugger. Has the purity of my fandom been compromised by fantasy sports?
It would sound that way. My argument is that's sort of on you. For a guy that watches as much Phillies baseball and is a lifelong fan you are, how you could be depressed that Jim Thome hits 2 home runs and 6 RBIs for Phillies is beyond me.
I feel weak and small after 45 years of suffering at the expense of the Philadelphia Phillies.
Phillies fans have a tough lot in life as it is, so I don't mean to pile on. But I will say this. At the end of the day, in a macro sense, I think it's okay. I mean, because like from Major League Baseball's point of view, you're paying closer attention to that game. You care about that game. You're a passionate fan. What's wrong with that? I don't see anything wrong with that. That's the part I don't get when I hear that kind of criticism.
All right, one final question. What should I do about David Bell?
You're still hanging on to him?
I think you've answered my question. Matthew, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Bob. Thank you.
Matthew Berry, also known as the talented Mr. Roto, can be found at talentedmrroto.com.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.